It's time for the Packet Pushers Podcast,
where too much networking would never be enough.
A podcast on the data networking industry, routing, switching, design, strategies, daily work life, or whatever we find interesting. Are you ready? Welcome to Packet Pushers Unplugged, a podcast on the wireless networking where real people discuss events, technology and work life in wireless data networking. During the week, we gather articles and various ideas and then get together to flap our chins about them. Get comfortable while we get around the workbench and diagnose the problems of the network world with humour, wit and just possibly technical talent. Speaking of talent, our world-class pool of resources are here again this week to do the business. Let's introduce the people on the show today, and I'd like to welcome Jennifer back to the show. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm still awake. What's been happening with you this week?
I've been preparing to get ready for a new job that's starting in starting on the 23rd, so starting about in a week from now.
Outstanding.
So trying to wrap up one and start up on another.
And this show's kind of like your fault. We had so much fun doing the packet pushes a couple of weeks ago. We said we should do one in wireless networking.
Yes.
And so what we're going to be doing is trying to run one about once a month or so, or whenever we've got enough time and material to push one out. And that's about what we're looking for, isn't it?
Yep.
So we will be doing the more of the unplugged shows as time goes by, but they won't be as regular as the main show. Come out as and when Jennifer gets organised, because mainly wireless networking is her thing and not mine. I'd also like to welcome Craig Schnars to the show. Hello, Craig.
Hey, how's it going today? How you doing?
Well, I'm here. I'm at home. I've been making all morning studying. What have you been doing with yourself this week?
I've just been studying. I've got my lab coming up pretty soon. Well, not pretty soon, a couple of months, and I just been studying. A lot of books, a lot of packet pushing, just reading. Going on.
And also with us today is Jeff Russell. Hello, Jeff.
Oh, fairly well, yourself?
Anything happened in your world this week?
I just got done with our engineering forum for the company. We had an opportunity where we all get together and kind of share input, ideas, and thoughts on the latest technology, and quite bored.
Well, that sounds entertaining. Well, you actually get around and argue with each other about technology or something.
That's pretty much what happens. And, you know, we get a little bit of competitive ego stuff going on that adds a lot more comedy to the mix. So, very good stuff.
Fair enough, then. Push on with the first topic in the show. Today, we want to have a look at 802.11 being used outdoors. So, traditionally, outdoor coverage is provided using single antennas for propagating the RF signal. Jennifer, this is probably your area of expertise, so why don't you lead it out and tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah, we have customers on a fairly regular basis now asking us, well, what's Cisco's 802.11n outdoor solution, because the 1522 mesh APs, they have extra antennas for the 2.4, but they're certainly not an N-rated access point. And Jeff, feel free to jump in if I say something stupid, because outdoors is not my specialty at all. But the solution that I've heard bandied... The solution that I've heard bandied around is to use a 1250 inside a NEMA enclosure and put the 1250 antennas on the outside of the NEMA box to use it outdoors. But that's not the most elegant solution. I know there's lots of other outdoor vendors that have N-rated solutions, so I'm not really sure what a good suggestion would be for a customer that wants to do N outdoors and stick with Cisco. And this is where I want Jeff to jump in and tell me what he would tell the customer.
Yeah, the Cisco product line really doesn't have anything to offer aside from the 1250 for N, that where you can add external antennas. I don't know what the situation is there, but they're not really thinking very far ahead on that. But I know they have some things in development. Motorola actually has a great 802.11n solution for outdoor, and they've combined some technology for some acquisitions they've had over the years. One of the really cool things is they've got some dual polarity sector antennas that they put on their nodes that come out of an acquisition of a wireless point-to-point non-line-of-sight technology. So that's, you know, really the biggest challenge in the outdoor wireless space is being able to get around obstructions, and there's lots of them out there.
So definitely.
They have a pretty neat option for that. It's about 35 pounds. Somebody was telling me it was 80 pounds. I can't imagine something 80 pounds going on a telephone pole instead.
No. The Cisco AP is bad enough. I think it's like 20 to 25.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, that's landing opportunities are a real big concern.
Yes. And never mind, my big beef with outdoor surveying is lugging that damn 25-pound AP around to move it from location to location.
Well, you've got to lift that thing a long way, haven't you? It's got to go a long distance, and you've got to carry it up onto roofs and weird things like that.
It's a real pain. That's why I don't like
it. You got your muscles from.
Make sure you wear your back brace.
Exactly.
It talks here about other outdoor MIMO-capable APs, MIMO. What's an MIMO AP?
An outdoor, like a MIMO AP is an access point that has a bunch of different antennas, usually three, multiple in, multiple out, so that you can have two antennas receiving or three antennas receiving or sending at the same time. It's to get better signal for the clients when there's lots of multipath present. That's the whole plus of the 802.11n is lots of antennas and lots of speed.
Yeah, so basically, you know, from point A to point B, from a RF perspective, you have many paths. You know, you have your direct path from point A to point B, which is the straight line. But you also bounce off of things, too. And in traditional 802.11 networking, you have a mechanism called diversity that handles that. And basically, it's just the ability to go and say, okay, I hear better on this antenna, so this is the antenna I'm going to use to transmit and receive on. And then, oh, wait a minute, now I hear it better on this antenna, so I'm going to do it over here. Hmm. 802.11n, it actually takes those different paths and does some really funky stuff to bring it all together, give you better throughput by actually using those additional paths and also giving you better reliance of signal quality.
See, he said it better than I did.
That's because my coworkers just you know, at this forum just told me better ways to say it. That's why. they have to elaborate on my position, and that makes me better, right?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Motorola also has a mesh AP. One of the other interesting things I wanted to talk about, for example, is that there's these wireless networking solutions which provide mesh radio networks. Now, corporate wireless network solutions that we have are they using mesh networking today in the radio networks, in the wireless networking?
There can be mesh indoors. Aerohive basically works off a mesh indoor solution where you just have one AP connected to the network and all the other ones mesh wirelessly with the on the A backhaul, the 5 gigahertz backhaul in between the APs to form a wireless mesh. But typically you don't do an indoor mesh. Guys, if you want to jump in, it's not something that I've seen before widely deployed, yeah. But that's just me.
Typically what you see people doing is when they either don't have the availability to run cable to certain locations or they're just too cheap to buy the cable and install it, you'll see them, you know, put that kind of thing in.
So mesh networking is, I would think, would often be used for security cameras, for example, where people have IP cameras at the tops of poles.
Certainly.
And they're
covering them as a car park. And then instead of actually having like a wire going up to an access point, we use wireless networking to create a backbone between them all and actually route the packets on between access point to access point. Now, the place where I'd like to use a mesh solution, and particularly I would be interested in talking about an open source wireless mesh, is I have a school where we don't need a lot of bandwidth. They just need to really have access to the internet and to share the odd file from a server. And on the server, we're actually talking about installing a thin client. So really, all we need the users or the kids to be able to use is a computer with a Citrix or an RDP or session on it, and then having a wireless mesh network. Because then I don't have to trench up the school to try and lay cable down, which is expensive and, in a school's case, is difficult. What sort of open source tools are available to do that? Has anybody worked in that space?
Well, there's a good website for like open source stuff. For if you go to www.linksysinfo.org, everything is there. From like you've got your all your open, you buy your like your generic Linksys WRT54GL, which is an open source Linksys router, and then they've got forms there for like DDWRT Tomato, which is a wireless thing, a wires software that allows you to do mesh between two routers. It's a very nice forum, very helpful.
Okay. Now, the thing that I wanted to know is, so I've done some research into this and looked at the different. There's FreeFunk, which seems to have a very robust solution. Then there's DDWRT, and then there's Tomato, who seems to have solutions. And then you buy these add-ons, which provide the mesh networking or the wireless routing solution. You guys don't seem to have used it much. We don't see it used much in the corporate world. Mostly we're relying on vendor solutions for that.
Yeah, definitely. In the corporate world, you're definitely going to see boxes with logos on them, and it's not typically Linksys. And if it is, we're trying to convince them to replace it with something real that can be monitored. Once your system gets really big and you have more than, say, like 5 or 6 access points, it can kind of get out of control. But you see usually in rural countries or countries where there's not much of an infrastructure to use to begin with, you'll see basically DIY hacking of consumer product to suit a service that doesn't currently exist in any way, shape, or form. And they certainly don't have the budget to buy real enterprise solutions. But I've never actually done it myself. I'm kind of interested to go on eBay and get some of those older ones that could be loaded with the DDWRT, because I know they changed something in them. They changed the code, or you can't hack the new ones the way that you could the old ones. And I haven't actually done it, but I probably should, just so I can speak more intelligently about it.
Yeah. I'm not sure Cisco's convinced that open source is a good idea. I don't think Cisco really participates, and whether they want to continue that now that they own Linksys. But I've seen some white box manufactured stuff where people making hardware that can be bought by people to do some of this stuff. Yeah. I haven't built up enough confidence to actually go ahead and start spending money on buying the kit yet. So it's part of the challenges. So speaking about learning wireless, let me throw the question over to someone like Jeff first. If you wanted to start learning about wireless and get studying, what do you need to know? Like, where would you start to start getting onto wireless and learning more about it?
Well, the first thing that I would say you need to do is try to understand RF properties in general, because the majority of wireless engineers that are out there, they kind of rely on the manufacturer's product line to kind of guide them through what they're going to do. And it's, the manufacturers like Cisco, Ribbon Networks, Maru, they've all kind of made it easy to go in and do a very basic kind of survey and install and then configure. But what inevitably happens is you have situations that start to arise in the wireless network, poor performance, just drop packets, drop calls if you're doing voice, and nobody really understands why. And that's because the design didn't take that into consideration. There's a lot of different properties that you want to consider. Of course, you have your wireless signal, but you got to understand also what your noise floor is. And to understand all that, you've really got to go, just basically an RF fundamentals class, I would say, is the best starting point.
Yeah, and in the same way that traditional networking has an Ethernet fundamentals course, or back in the old days it was, we all had to know how token ring or FDDI worked, understanding how RF gets the packets from point A to point B is really vital to being successful in getting a wireless network to run properly. You can probably get a wireless network to run, getting it to run properly is the hard part.
Yes, yep. That's very yep. true.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to say, one really great resource is CWNP.com. It's like a lot of people are just studying, trying to learn, but a lot of people don't have $3,000 for a class or $5,000 for a week. So you go to CWNP.com. It's a vendor-neutral forum. They've got some really awesome books, like their CWNA study guide. It's not a study guide that's like dry or it's what you really need to know. It's what the real professionals read. It's not like somebody just got paid to write a book or something. I personally went through it. It's incredible. And then I would say stuff like that.
And so. I would totally agree with that, because like you said, you can run a wireless network without really knowing what you were doing. When I first started, I really had no idea what I was doing. I was copying something that worked and applying it to where it didn't work. And I just only wish that the CWNP books existed when I needed them, say like in 2003 and 2004, because I was kind of just winging it.
Yeah,
and those books are
awesome.
Frame,
we all were.
Living on a prayer.
Halfway
there.
Okay,
I look back at some of the deliverable documents I gave customers, 6 years ago, and I think to myself, what the hell was I thinking? I was such an idiot.
Well, I remember the first wireless network that I installed, and I was basing all of my antenna design off a second-year physics, radiation physics course I did. And, there really wasn't any documentation in the manufacturer's stuff about what the antennas did, other than to say, a directional antenna, an omnidirectional, flat plane antenna, or a 180-degree antenna, And I was the only person in the whole team who knew what that meant, because I was the only one who'd actually done an engineering degree.
Wow.
And Not that I finished, but.
Oh, you neither, huh?
I've got an excuse. But it helps to understand. I mean, it's very difficult to understand antennas and how they work because they don't work like electricity. It's not like you just put a signal in one end and appears out the other. RF is open to all sorts of environmental impacts. It can be all the way from, you know, some microwave where the shielding's not working right to, you know, spectrum problems. So you're suggesting, Craig, that this CWNP site's a great place to get started with.
Yes, it's a very, very good site. Another site is Keith Persons runs a wireless blog at wlanpros.com, and he does a weekly podcast for wireless LAN professionals. Very excellent resource. He's very professional. He's just top notch. He's on Twitter at Keith Persons, I believe. And another one, I want to say the king of the wireless training would have to be Jerome Henry. He has a blog at wirelessccie.blogspot.com. If you ever get a chance to take a course, he's the one person I would pay the $4,000 to per week if you ever could.
Yeah. The story with him is I think he's the first non-Cisco employee to have passed the CCIE wireless lab.
The first person outside of Cisco. I believe he passed last year when everybody else was just like, what? But he has they have, and if you don't have the money for the class, you can buy the book from Fastlane. It's like $495, totally worth it.
So that's for the CCIE course you're talking about, CCIE wireless. Yes. You'd be recommending that. But if you were somebody who is starting out, you'd go to the CWNP site and you'd look at buying the CWNA stuff.
The CWNA book.
The cool thing about the CWNP thing is it's vendor agnostic, so you know. You're not relying on Cisco or Rubler or someone else to tell you the details that they think you need because, of course, it's going to be tailored to their product.
Now, that's important, isn't it? Because I look at the wireless industry and I'm not all that close to it. And there's a lot of independent vendors in the wireless networking space. Cisco doesn't own the networking industry in the wireless space. Like, you know, there's dozens of different vendors producing products that have all got slightly different emphases in that space.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at Aruba Networks, their biggest thing is they have a firewall built into their solution. And it's all, you know, the wireless controller, the firewall, everything's all in one box. So they really are more successful in the security space, especially government and, you know, quite a bit in education. So, you know, whereas Cisco, you've got to piece and put together additional appliances to get that same functionality. But then again, Cisco integrates more tightly into their switched infrastructure. So you're always doing some kind of trade-off there.
So Cisco would be better placed for an 802.1x implementation if I'm reading that right.
I think in a lot of cases that will be true, yeah.
So what do all the other vendors do that's – like, is there really that much diversity in the wireless networking space that makes it possible for them to exist? Like there's companies like Trapeze – Ruckus, which I think now Trapeze seems to be a corporate product, which seems to be the main alternative to Cisco. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think Aruba owns the next slice of the market space, and Trapeze and Maru kind of fall after that.
Yeah,
I would tend to agree.
You're talking about the enterprise world.
Because when I was working at the military base, we had Aruba, and just like Jeff said, because of the security thing, because of the firewall built in, that's what they tended to lean towards.
That's
okay. Okay, so that's a good point for us to introduce our first sponsor for the show, Esculta Training. Esculta Training is an award-winning Cisco Learning Solutions partner in the US who offers an array of advanced Cisco courses addressing multiple technologies. Using authorized Cisco course material and a strong customer focus, they provide top-notch solutions and consistently have the highest customer satisfaction ratings. Esculta provides their training using various delivery methods to easily meet your unique needs across the United States. And in addition to their extensive public class schedule, Esculta excels at developing and delivering client-specific and customized training to fit your environment. They are partners with Cisco for course development, and they deliver public training courses and private on-site training. Esculta has the right solution for you. You can reach them at 1-800-297-4294 or find them on the web at www.esculta.com. They also blog at blog.ascolta.com and on Twitter at @ascolta. And they regularly post technical content and sometimes even some special offers. If you mention the Packet Pushers Unplugged podcast when you book a class, you'll receive a $250 discount to get you started. That's Ascolta training, and they want you to learn something. All right, so returning to what we did, have we got time to fit in some discussion around RF basics? So if we were to talk about an introduction to RF frequencies for PAPES listeners who are folding over from the main show who are going to be enterprise-focused, what sort of topics would we talk about in that sort of space? Jennifer, do you want to pick up a topic there and start it off?
Some of the factors you want to take into consideration when you're placing APs inside a building is you want to keep them away from your AC vents or your electrical conduit or elevator shafts, if at all possible, because all of those big metal structures are going to affect the way the RF is sent out of the antennas from the AP that you're placing. That's one thing right off the bat.
What about you, Jeff? What have you seen in this space as a classic gotcha?
Well, the biggest thing that I see is people not taking into account what clients are going to use on the network. So, for instance, a typical indoor access point can transmit out at 100 milliwatts, but your typical client device is only going to do about 32, which is about a third of it. So there's a lot of cases where you go into a situation where people are having problems on the network and you find out that all the APs were designed at full power. If the client can't handle that power level, then you're going to be in a situation where your client, if you're at the edge of the coverage cell of the AP, your client can see the AP and talk to them, but the AP's communication doesn't reach back to the client because the client's zone of influence is so much smaller. So you get into a one-way communication scenario.
I said kind of like a hidden node syndrome where the AP can see the talker, but the talker can't see the AP and the other people on the other side.
Right. So, that's a big thing that people miss. And so, typically when we design the network, we go a little bit below typically the client capability. So we might, for instance, with 100 milliwatt AP, we may turn it down to 25 milliwatts and design with that in mind.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people tend to wind back the transmission power on the wireless base stations because they believe it's better for people's health or something. So, that, yeah. So yeah. Sorry, did I say that out loud? What about you, Craig? What about in terms of the RF spectrum? What sort of tips have you got there?
Well, I work in a hospital environment, and what we run into a lot is interference from like cordless phones. And people, just things that they would normally use, or that you have like a lot of microwaves, and somebody eating popcorn, somebody waiting wanting to do something in the lunchroom, and their solution is always throw another AP up. But it's like, but a lot of people don't realize just throwing another AP up just doesn't work. It's just not like add another switch. You got to like, because you'll cause cold channel interference, and you'll cause more of a problem than you're adding. So just in general, just before you just throw another AP up, maybe talk to somebody and talk about it and see what you really need to do. Do you need more throughput? Do you need smaller cell size? What's going on? Just, basic stuff.
Yep. I know one problem I had with a hospital once was that we had the I was working in a cardiac hospital, which specialized in heart surgery, and they had a series of monitors which went onto the people's onto the bodies after they'd been operated on, and they were actually using the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum to communicate back to a monitoring piece of kit. And you can imagine we had a lot of time keeping that.
Yeah. Oh, I can see that's fun right there. It's like, yeah. 2 a.m, beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, it caused us all sorts of problems because in the cardiac recovery ward, we couldn't have wireless equipment for, whatever it was. I think we ended up building a cage. It turns out that there's a standard that mesh fencing. The mesh fencing you get out on the street, and it's about 2 inches by 2 inches kind of thing, and it's very common in Australia as a fence, and they use it a lot in warehouses as a way of creating bays. So when they create the shelves that they put the forklifts to put all the gear on, they put this mesh up around the bays. And I remember putting a wireless solution into a warehouse and going, oh yeah, no, we just put it up here. And I literally could sit on 2 inches away from the other side of that mesh fencing, and I was getting zero signal. And it wasn't until much later on I realized that it quarter size of this of the wavelength. So 2.4 gigahertz is about 12 inches long, if I remember rightly. And this this mesh was exactly the quarter wavelength, and it was just absorbing the signal completely. Like, it might as well have been a sheet of lead. And we ended up having to go down the lines of the shelves and actually put directional antennas at the end of each row, pushing down the lines to be able to get to these wireless stations that were on the forklifts.
Yep.
It was weird.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it took us a long time to find the answer to that one.
And that's another good point there is that, you know, your types of antennas play a lot into what you're going to install. So in the case you're talking about, using a directional antenna like a patch or a Yagi shooting down the middle of an aisle, that's a pretty common thing that we do, that Jennifer and I do, and what we do for a living. And, you know, in some cases you might need like a sector antenna if you want to cover like a 120-degree area, but you don't want to, you know, cover outside of that area for whatever reason.
Yeah, and the thing about a sector antenna is that it focuses that 100 milliwatt signal into a given space, if my RF knowledge is and so you can actually...
And there's nothing coming from the back, yeah.
And you...
What cellular provider choose?
Yeah. There's still lots of things I don't understand about wireless, though. There you go.
Well, when it comes to dealing with outdoor RF in particular, there's a lot of calculations involved that you got to keep in mind. You know, indoor wireless is kind of an easy thing overall because you have certain sizes of coverage cells to deal with, and you just figure out how your cells are going to do some minor overlap to provide coverage all the way through. But in outdoor, we're talking about mesh networking and also thinking about point-to-point networking. There's a lot of calculations. You want to understand that, you know, from point A to point B, you want a certain amount of signal strength to go through. So it's important to, in talking about the RF fundamentals classes, this is one thing that you'll learn, things like Fresnel zone, which that's a zone of coverage around the signal that you're sending out from a transmitter that cannot be obstructed or you won't have sufficient signal to reach your distant end. And then you use calculations to determine, okay, if I want to get from point A to point B, I want this much received power at the other end. You know, what do I have to do to make that happen? And you factor in things like transmitter power and antenna gain.
Yeah, that, some of that's fairly specialized. I'm thinking perhaps what we should do is on the next show out, we should consider maybe making a topic just on outdoor antenna design and maybe have that as the topic of our next show. All right, well, that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers Unplugged on wireless networking. We should be back again in a few weeks. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about your week and where we can find you.
You can find me at Jennifer Lucille on Twitter, and in my little bio, it's got a link to my blog where I'm keeping all my notes about studying for the wireless lab. Coming up, I'm preparing for transitioning from one job to the next, trying to wind up all of the stuff that I've been working on and getting ready for what lays ahead. That's always exciting.
Like, changing jobs is always a good time and a sad time too, because you actually go through grieving for the people that you're not going to see again. Jeff, what's been happening with you this week and where can people find you?
Well, they can probably find me lurking around Jennifer's blog somewhere. I don't have anything of my own set up just yet, but during the week here, I'll be working on some new projects that we're going to be attacking for some wireless outdoor and indoor projects, doing some surveys, and that's about it.
Okay. And Craig, what are you up to?
Studying. And you can find me at Twitter at the_WiFiGuy_. And again, my blog is coming up. Will be the www.wifiguy.net.
Excellent. And I'm Greg Farrow, and you can find me at etherealmind.com or on Twitter as @etherealmind. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net and leave comments on today's show and follow us on Twitter at @packetpushers. This is the first show for Packet Pushers Wireless Edition, where we're focusing on wireless networking. We are going to continue to build the show up over time, and we really would value your input and suggestions. This week we had some great suggestions from listeners on different topics and getting in contact with people. Please keep those coming in, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Remember, too much networking would never be enough.
Thank you.